eventually, you know, I was allowed to use a chop saw with a lot of supervision. The way he kind of started out with me on these saws was he'd watch me use a saw, and the rule was, if I say stop really loud, cause we got earmuffs on, I want you to be ready for that. Just stop what you're doing and stay still. And so that was kind of the practice. Every so often he would say, stop.
The Blue Collar Voices Show.
The answer to the last trivia question is 5 years. It was the highest in the world when it was completed in 1935. Its base is as thick as 2 football fields are long. The amount of concrete used in building it was enough to pave a road stretching from San Francisco to New York City.
I want to be able to do that. I think I'm ready.
Ready for what?
Devoting my life to a higher purpose.
Billy?
Service to others, right? That's gonna be me now. I'll do whatever you think I should.
All right.
All right.
I think you should continue your training as a gymnast. A warrior does not give up what he loves, Dan. He finds the love in what he does.
Look at me! Look at me. I have a metal rod in my leg.
A warrior's not about perfection, or victory, or invulnerability. He's about absolute vulnerability. That's the only true courage.
What kind of training do you think I could do? I just had an accident.
The accident is your training. Life is choice. You can choose to be a victim or anything else you'd like to be.
Just ignore what happened to me.
A warrior acts, only a fool reacts.
What if I can't do it?
That's the future. Throw it out.
Well, how would we start?
There is no starting or stopping. Only doing.
All right, man, you ready to get started?
I'm ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Collar Voices Show. Gather around your audio devices today and let's welcome Jason Bergfeld. However, he goes by Jay. Jay runs Jay's Handyman Service, doing business as Jay's Door and Trim, based out of Castle Rock, Washington, and specializes in doors, trim, and millwork. Obviously, he is not a stranger to other areas of carpentry, including handyman-type services. Our journey of discovery today is to delve into the mind that is sometimes associated with Jay and learn a little bit about how he processes the world. We'll also hear about his life growing up, how he got into this line of work, and dive into what he does now, his goals, lessons learned, perhaps some tough stories or two. Jay, welcome to the Blue Collar Voices Show.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I am glad you're here. Jay, take a second and describe for me your primary business focus.
Yeah, absolutely. So I focus currently on doors, trim, and millwork installations. I do a little bit of casework, which is cabinet installations. I've got a lot of experience with cabinets growing up with my dad. Primarily, I like to focus on doors, trim, and millwork.
Excellent. And just as a side note, what is millwork?
Yeah, that's a good question. Millwork is like crown molding, anything wood that's produced at a mill for carpenters to go ahead and install on site for projects. So cabinets would not be considered millwork, though sometimes custom-built cabinets on site is millwork. So basically, I'd like to say millwork is on-site carpentry for the most part. That's a good way to explain it.
Okay. So I see you're based out of Castle Rock, Washington. Where were you born and raised?
Yeah, I was born in Denver, Colorado. We didn't live there long. We moved to, from there, Arizona. We moved several times in Arizona. I lived in Phoenix, Flagstaff, Prescott, Cortis Junction, and I think another place. Then I moved to Washington, Longview, Washington, when I was 5.
Wow. You moved a lot of places before you were 5.
Well, you know, my brother, he's 3 years older than me, and the story my dad tells is we moved about 20 times or something. So that's crazy.
Yeah, it is for sure.
My dad, he switched around jobs quite a bit, just kind of the way it worked out. My parents divorced when I was 5. My mom remarried, and then they moved us up here to Longview, Washington, to kind of start over up here. And then it was about 2 years later, my dad moved to Portland, Oregon, so he could be closer to us, because my stepdad moved us up here to Washington. And my dad was kind of like, whoa, what the heck? You know, everybody's got their own story. And that's kind of where we ended up, is Longview, Washington. So my dad's like, well, I want to be closer to my boys. Career-wise, he's always been a carpenter. So it was easier for him to find a job in Portland, Oregon, than Longview, Washington. If he wanted to live in Longview, Washington, he would have had to ultimately drive to Portland for work.
Roughly, where is Longview located?
About 60 miles north, 50 to 60 miles north of Portland, Oregon.
Okay, cool.
So I'm in Southwest Washington.
All right. You're a kid. When did you have your first exposure to anything construction-y or crafts or that type of thing?
Yeah, you know, in Flagstaff, I remember being in Flagstaff, so, you know, a kid's memory. So around 3 or 4, my dad was building us swing sets and odds and ends, bicycle ramps and stuff to keep us busy. So right away, I got to watch him build things, learn from a little bit from that. Not much, obviously, I'm a toddler. Just witnessing my dad build stuff was great. And then I didn't really see him from the age of 5 to about 7 at all. And then when he moved up to Portland to work, he got a job at a cabinet shop. Ultimately, my experience with building started at 7 years old. Every weekend I would go to my dad's house. We would end up going to that cabinet shop. He worked weekends a lot of times. So that's where I got to start, you know, learning carpentry. Taught me how to read a tape measure, use a drill with caution. And I got the hang of the drill, and I wasn't allowed to use power tools or anything, but learning how to use a handsaw right away at age 7, I was allowed to use the handsaw, the drill, you know, drive as many nails as I wanted to and stuff. Obviously my skill set wasn't there, but that's how I started out.
I can just imagine, as a 7-year-old, you didn't care. You're just doing stuff. You're having fun.
Yeah.
We need more of that today.
Yeah, absolutely. My daughter now, she's 4.5. She gets to see me build stuff constantly, and she really likes that. Funny story, when she was, 2.5, 3, she about 2.5, she's like, she really caught on to that. I'm always building stuff. We're in the house eating dinner, and she's like, Dad, did you build this wall? You know, did I build the house? And it's like, oh, that's so cool. I'd be honored if I did. But no, Sage, I didn't build the house. And she would just point at stuff. Did you build that? Did you build that table? And it's like, no. So that's pretty cool.
So you tinkered and you started going towards your teenage years and adulthood. How did you progress in your education and learning of more and more of the concepts of construction and building and carpentry.
I continued learning from my dad at these cabinet shops he worked at. I don't remember exactly, but he changed cabinet shops a few times. But the whole way through, I got to tag along with him, which was really neat. Not very many companies would allow someone to bring their kid with them to a job site. You know, obviously I wasn't building anything or working, but just tagging along, learning what I could. Once I started going with them to these newly framed houses where it's just the studs were up and the sheeting was on, no drywall yet, that's kind of where I fell in love with carpentry, because you get to see the guts of a house and how it's built. And I just knew from that moment, that's what I wanted to do when I got older for a career.
That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. When did you get to start assisting with helping to install the cabinets and doing more of the work?
So yeah, like I said, I just followed my dad around these cabinet shops. Ultimately, he landed a pretty sweet job at one of them that he liked finally, and he stayed there for a long time. That's where things really, the dial turned up on my ability to start using tools and stuff. On the weekends, I'd be there, and I didn't get to, at that age, I didn't get to be, you know, an employee and work or nothing, but my dad, I'd stay with him on the weekends. What else do I do but build things for myself? So he'd give me some material, some scraps, and say, you know, you can build boxes or have fun, whatever you want. I was still at a point to where I'm using hand saws. I wasn't allowed to use skill saws or chop saws or table saws. He would cut out a material list for me. That was a big part of it, was he'd cut out parts for like a jewelry box or just any type of box. And then I got to use the nail gun. So that's good. Mm-hmm. I went through the nail gun safety with him. He did really good with the safety. I mean, that's huge. Using the nail guns and wood glue and tape as a clamp to hold these boxes together. And from there, eventually, you know, I was allowed to use a chop saw with a lot of supervision. The way he kind of started out with me on these saws was he'd watch me use a saw, and the rule was, if I say stop really loud, because we got earmuffs on, I want you to be ready for that. Just stop what you're doing and stay still. And so that was kind of the practice. Every so often he would say stop, and I'd stop, I'd freeze and wouldn't move. Because the thing is, if you're halfway through a cut or a table saw, and he would say stop, and I would, maybe if I would move my hands or pull the material back from the saw, then it would, you know, you'll have a kickback.
Right.
So that system worked out really well. He'd say stop, I'd stop, the saw would, and we'd shut the saw off, I'd stay still, and then he'd explain to me what kind of situation I was in, stuff like that. Sounds a little dicey, but it went really well with me and him.
That is very cool. I like the fact that he stressed the safety. Does that resonate with you still today as far as the safety is concerned?
Absolutely. And that's the way I see it with teaching kids, is you got to be so careful. Like, you can't just give them a short spiel and, you know, this is kickback and make sure your hands are out of the way. Like, you got to be right there with them. He did that, obviously. He gave me like an orientation on every tool. He gave me examples of things that could go wrong. And in fact, he showed me things that could go wrong. You know, he would hold a board on the chop saw not so close to the fence, and bow, pieces would go flying. I was far away when he did that. He says, stand over there and let me show you. Because that's firsthand experience. Like, whoa, my dad wasn't kidding.
Right. That is good. Yeah. I think that the safety is really important, and you can't glue your fingers back together.
No, maybe I wasn't till like 10 or 11 to where I finally got to use a table saw, but I watched him and stood right there with him while running the saw. And every day he'd teach me something about what he's doing. See where my hands are placed. See how you don't want to pull back on your material. Just all the things that you could learn with saws, I learned, and then finally got to that point where he's like, okay, you can start using these table saws and stuff like that.
So once he cut you loose, did you feel like sometimes he was still watching you to make sure you're doing it right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And for a while he was, and then eventually it's like, okay, he's got it, you know? And I'd say from there, the cabinet shop let me be nail hole filler and sanding duty. So that's kind of what I did for a long time. So I'd go to my dad's on the weekend. And like I said, it ended up to where he worked on the weekends a lot. He enjoys what he does a lot. So that's, you know, you never work a day in your life if you enjoy it. The income was good for him, so that worked out.
Right. When you say you're the nail hole filler.
Yeah.
This is on pretty decent cabinetry, correct?
Yep. So they were building high-end cabinets for something called Street of the Dreams or Street of Dreams. And they basically, I don't know if it was an organization. It's been so long. I'd probably Google it myself after we're done with this show. But Street of Dreams, they built high-end homes, super high-end homes. And it was kind of like a display of what's the next level? How much more quality interior finishes can we do, including exterior? For the cabinet side of things, it was high-end cabinets.
Okay. And being high-end cabinets, and I really don't know, does that mean it would be wood finish or painted or?
Wood finish. There really wasn't much, or if anything at all, they did that was paint grade.
Okay. So this makes filling the nail holes a different level.
Yeah.
And so did you have to like make sure that your color matching in the little holes so that it matches the current color of the wood? Each like that could vary across a piece of wood, right?
Yep. Yeah. So different tones of the cabinet grade sandable nail hole filler. Fram Wood is a brand. So it kind of seems like farm wood, but it's called Fram Wood. It's a very durable and sandable putty nail hole filler.
Okay.
And it stains well. That way, whatever color you're staining, it takes hold really well. And the nail hole fillers don't stick out. And obviously, you don't have a lot of exposed nail heads with the high end stuff. You got your dados and glue and clamps, but you know, some of the applications were nailed, but they even nail hole filled stuff that you wouldn't see. I spent a lot of time nail hole filling and sanding, hours and hours of sanding.
So as you continue your educational process, what would you say the next milestone that you learned is?
Well, from there, obviously I progressed into running some routers and other sorts of power tools. And how that came about was, I guess we could fast forward. I'm about 16 now. So I was actually got to be a worker at that cabinet shop, put in some actual hours, but it wasn't anything like you got to work an 8-hour day. It was more or less, hey, work as much as you want today. Some days I took off early or just, and I didn't really take off. I was at the cabinet shop. I did my own project. So I thought that was pretty neat that it was a really laid back spot I had that I could do work if I wanted or build my own projects. They have, as a cabinet shop, a large one. You could imagine they had a lot of wood scraps that I could just use to build stuff. So running power tools. And from there, obviously school takes a priority. So that was all on the weekends. And then the summertime is where I started putting in the hours. Working a full 8-hour day at that age is a little tough. And I thought that was pretty neat that I could kind of pick and choose what I was going to do that day.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. From there, after high school, I went to Job Corps. It's like a vocational college. I took the pre-union carpenter apprenticeship program, learned a little bit there.
On the apprenticeship program, do they expect you to have any knowledge when you come in?
No, not at all.
Okay. So how much did you benefit or learn by going through that program?
You know, definitely learned quite a bit. You know, my dad taught me all the basics you'd ever need to know. So I really had an upper hand on carpentry going in to maybe some students would have. Job Corps does all kinds of different things like culinary arts, electrical, welding, painting, all of the above, just all trades. It's a trade school. So for me, carpentry wise, I kind of went into it and I kind of knew myself that I was going to be good at it because I already had learned so much from my dad. Job Corps is a, well, the carpenter program on average, when I started, they said, well, plan on being here for about 12 months. Plan on being here for 12 months. That's average. Well, I got completed and moved on out of there in 5.5 months. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
Sure. But you did, of course, have the benefit of prior education and knowledge that was probably really advantageous.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. You moved on from there?
Yep. So like I said, it was a pre-union program. They want you to join the union. They didn't want to train you at that Job Corps and have you, you know, just not join the union. So from there, right away at 19, got signed up as a first-term apprentice in the union.
So what would you say the correct description would be for what you were doing at that point?
Yeah, as a first-term union carpenter, I could tell you my first job was at a church doing millwork installation. The carpenters union, you go to school, you take classes. I think it's every 3 months you go take a class. And the different types of classes are everything from concrete, framing, roof framing, drywall installation, siding, blueprint, survey, and the list kind of just goes on. You take your apprenticeship classes, and then you have to have a certain amount of on-site working hours. And with your classes and your on-site working hours, then you get to bump up a next term. Mm-hmm. So to second term, third and fourth, all the way to eighth term, and then you journey out. Each term apprenticeship, you have to have a certain amount of hours and a certain amount of class hours. If you're lacking one or the other, then you don't get to move up.
It really seems that the union, love them or hate them, want to make sure that you're well-rounded, well-educated, and you're performing and doing good quality work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I learned a lot, a lot, a lot.
Did you go through the whole level? Did you actually achieve the journeyman level?
Yep.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah, at 23 years old, I became journeyman.
Okay. And what did that do for you career-wise?
From there, you know, just keep on working. There's a stigma that some of the apprentices would have that, you know, you don't want to journey out because then they won't work you as much because you're expensive. So ultimately, it's a lot more pay. A first-term apprentice starts out at 51% of journeyman wage.
Okay. And that's always just a sliding scale. So whatever the journeyman is, that's always just a straight 51%, that type of thing.
For the first term. And then you every time you get second, you know, you hit second term, third term, you get a pay raise every time, about $2 too, about between $1.50 and $2. And then finally you reach journeyman wage.
Kind of looking at those numbers and that scale between a stage one and a journeyman, you're looking at roughly the numbers back in that day, about a $16 differential.
Yeah. Let's see. I was a first term apprentice in 2004, making $12.36 an hour. Yeah. And journeyman was about $25-$26 an hour.
Okay. And did the journeyman come with any additional benefits like insurance, 401k, anything like that?
Yeah. Full health insurance, a pension. So no 401ks, just a carpenter union invested pension. So every hour you work, you get X amount of dollars.
All your hours were religiously recorded and the union knew how much work you'd done.
Yep. Yep.
Interesting. I have no experience with the union, so that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to talk about that for, you know, and yeah.
Well, that's cool. I do like how they covered so many topics. No matter which area you're working in, you kind of have a grasp of the full picture.
Yeah, absolutely. They wanted you to be pretty well balanced in all aspects of carpentry. They do have drywall finishing specialists or interior exterior specialists. So you can join the carpenters in that segment. But what I joined is a commercial carpenter, a flat carpenter, if you will. With the apprenticeship, you take all these different classes. You learn, you know, like we took a bridge building class. Not that you were going to go out and work on bridges, but they wanted you to be ready. That way, if you're on the out of work list and you're waiting for your next job, a contractor can call you. Not that you need to be a certified bridge builder, but they need a carpenter that's done a lot of things and took in that class helps. Mm-hmm. And I never worked on bridges.
You have an idea of what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, after you got your journeyman, how long did you work just doing regular journeyman stuff? Just keep on talking. Tell me a little bit about your progression.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, my first union job as an apprentice was a millwork installation at a church. And we installed $1 million of trim and millwork.
Oh, my goodness.
It's beautiful. I was able to go back. Oh, it's been several weeks now, but I drove back to that church. It's been 19 years since I was there, 18 and a half years or so. And I drove back to the, I just had to see it. It's been 19 years. I was like, dude, I got to go see this millwork package and see what it looks like. And I went there and I talked to the church and asked for permission to take pictures and videos and whatnot. And I did. It was so cool to see. It was awesome.
That is great. Go ahead.
So I got to see that. That was my first job. You know, I could talk a little bit about each job, but from there, I ended up doing doors, worked for a company installing commercial doors at hospitals, churches, schools, commercial buildings. Let's see. I kind of jumped there for a second. Sorry about that.
You know, I was just curious, you know, how your job, how things progressed. And so then it almost seemed like, boom, you're talking about the doors. So how did you get to doors?
Yeah, you know, I got to doors. So I fell in love with doors from that door company. The millwork I installed at first, I really loved. And I love cutting boards to fit, specifically scribe cutting to wavy walls, doing whatever it takes to make wood fit in place on site. That's what millwork installation is. It's not a box screwed to the wall. From there, I ended up working on a flat panel roofing company. So you got to think of places like Walmart or Safeway or the big box stores. They got those large flat roofs. Mm-hmm. So we used to set trusses and stuff and nail down plywood, miles and miles of nails and plywood.
Wow. Okay. That's quite a difference going from millwork to doing those large roofs.
Yeah. Yep.
And if I'm getting the chronological order correct, you did the trim work, you did that church, and then you worked on the roofs later.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. My career bounced around quite a bit.
Okay. When did you think or start thinking about doing work for yourself?
Yeah, I was a journeyman for about 10 years. At about 9 years, I started thinking to myself, I kind of want to do my own thing. And I got fond of the idea of business. At about 15, almost at 15 years of being in the Carpenters Union, it hit me pretty heavy. I knew at that time I was done working in the union and I wanted to go work for myself, start up a company and build a business. Otherwise, I've been self-employed for 5 years now. May will be 5 years.
So how did that process go? I mean, how did that come together? Like, because it's not just boom, one day you're working for yourself and you got everything going. So how did that, how did you transition that? How did you approach it? And how did you pull all that together?
Well, before I left my job, I studied a lot. So I studied for about 2 years before I took off on my own. I didn't really talk a whole lot about that at work because, you know, then they're like, well, if you're leaving, why don't you just leave now? But I wanted to study first.
Sure.
I did what I could to learn everything business off the internet, you know, and YouTube. And I started following people's stories is one way to put it. And then that really encouraged me because it's like, I wanted to see, well, how do people even go about it? What's somebody else's story? And sure enough, if you look for people's stories, you'll find them. Following people's stories, I think, is the best way to go about doing what you want to do.
Definitely learn a lot.
Yeah.
I think that sharing your story here today can help somebody. They're going to hear your experiences. They may resonate, identify, take some parts of what you've done, what you've experienced. And they're like, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you did your studying and you're like, okay, I'm getting close. I'm getting ready. What steps did you take? Tell me a little bit about how you made it all happen.
So yeah, talked to my boss about it a little bit. My boss at that time for a very large company locally in my town, he didn't really so much encourage it, but at the same time, he was like, he thought it was pretty neat. He was self-employed, owned a company for himself for a while. And so he had a lot of stories. So that too kind of inspired me to, well, you know, I want to try that too. Every day at work, I loved being a carpenter. We were working maintenance and I loved what I was doing, but I felt I needed to change the scenery out of the commercial environment. So at that time I was working for a company, J.H. Kelly, doing maintenance work at the paper mills. I was pretty steady for 3 years there on the maintenance crew. That's where I really learned a lot about a variety of work.
Mm-hmm.
One day you're doing this type of work and the next day you're doing that. And it varied greatly. So a lot of it was scaffold too. I do have a lot of scaffold experience. I worked with Safeway scaffolding for about all in all. Like I said, my career was pretty sporadic through the layoffs and stuff when work gets slow. Then I'd go work for a different company, go back to doors, go back to roof framing. Mm-hmm. I've worked on a glue lam, post and beam building. I've worked on high rises, but ultimately working maintenance crew at J.H. Kelly for those 3 years is what I learned so much about organization, like keeping your tools organized and being able to switch gears quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We could be building a concrete form that does need to get done, but then all of a sudden we get the phone call. Hey, we got a hot job, mm-hmm. load up your tools. And now we're going to go do something completely different.
Right.
And that was really fun, but you got to stay organized, finish what you're doing with that concrete thing, load the tools in the truck, and you would go put them away, the stuff that you don't need, and then grab the kinds of tools you would need for this hot job, this something that needs to be done at the mill. They do a lot of emergency jobs. Being the maintenance contractor, we're contracted out all year long to fix things and make sure that that paper mill is running good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you're doing everything from brake fixes to like this little project. They need to do this thing. It's customization and repair.
Yeah. Yep. New construction and maintenance.
Excellent. And so when you're there working on, as your example, the concrete form, and then you have to go do something else, do you typically have everything you need on your truck or do you literally have to go get additional tools?
Exactly.
Okay.
Obviously, we had screw guns and impacts, the basics with us at all times. So it's not that we would need to go exactly put those tools away. We would keep those with us. And you're right. If we needed a chop saw, we would go grab that chop saw. We had a hub if you will, a shop, several Connexes full of tools. And we would go grab that chop saw or whatever we need, quickly jump in the truck all on site, and then drive. You know, the mill is about a mile or two radius. It's a large area. So and it take, you got to drive 10 miles an hour or so, some places five. So it can take you a while to drive to go get a tool. But we, that's what we would do, is quickly go grab some tools and go, you know, save the day with a maintenance issue.
I don't know how large you were, but if you got all the Connexes worth of equipment, did you have somebody that was in charge of maintaining the tools?
At the end of the day, our boss would make sure that we would put tools away right where they go. Even if we needed them the next day, you know, we were okay to leave screw guns and the basics, impact drivers, and, you know, we know we're going to need a roto hammer the next day. Very limited, but keep it to a minimum on what we leave in the truck. That way you start in the morning, the truck's clean, ready to go, and you could grab the tools you need for that day. Or if it was a concrete job, we would have toolboxes really on that site. There are so many tools.
I can imagine.
There was no shortage on tools with this company. They're a really good company to work for.
Okay.
Some companies, you got carpenters sharing skill saws, and that just doesn't work. It just, it even makes the carpenter frustrated just standing there.
Absolutely. So when I was talking about the maintenance, I guess I was talking more like the actual maintenance of the equipment, of the tools. Did you do all that yourself? Like, let's just say electrical cord is starting to get a little frayed and you need to have that cord replaced on the drill back when they had cords, or whatever it might be, things that are getting dull, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. So on brand new construction jobs, not at the mill, but other locations, because I did work with this company on new construction projects anywhere across the Southwest Washington, you know, on new construction jobs, if it was a large job, they would have one person designated to keep these tools organized. It's a very, very organized company.
Okay.
Yeah, we were obligated to inspect our tools each day for safe use. Power cords is a huge safety issue. We would check our cords if the ground knob was busted off on a cord. We didn't just throw it away. We would put a danger tape on it and put it in a damaged toolbox. There's a toolbox that we had set up just for broken tools, and you would tag it. So it's danger. Do not operate, and put that tool in the toolbox. And then every so often the company would come pick those up, because they obviously have their own office and warehouse here in town.
Okay. That tells me you had an awful lot of tools if you're able to put tools in there to be worked on and you didn't really miss it.
Yeah. Yep. This company, last I seen online, they're at a $300 million annual revenue. Their primary focus is paper mills, stuff like that, but they've eventually evolved into building high rises. So they'll build high rises. They're a general contractor. They understand the value of what it is like to be the technician, the carpenter, the pile driver, the pipe fitter. They understand what it's like to be there. And like I said, it's very frustrating being on a job site where there's limited tools. It slows things down, and it doesn't just slow things down. Me and most carpenters, we do not like standing around sharing tools.
Right.
It's just not a very good feeling. It doesn't feel like a good place to work. So this company, they went above and beyond to make sure there was plenty of tools, high production, you know, quality production, efficiency. Ultimately, safety first, but yeah. Yeah, I learned a lot at that company.
How long did you say you worked there at that company again?
3 years consistently, but as an apprentice, like say back in 2006, I worked for them too on new construction jobs and stuff.
Did you transition to your own company directly from that company where you were working there?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And how did that process go? You said you'd been studying. And so now you're like, okay, you're going to phase this out, but obviously you're going to set something up so that you're not going to just walk into nothingness. What were you doing on your own personal side to ramp up, to get ready to go?
On that maintenance crew, work slowed down. It usually does, but not as much as it did that particular year. I'm trying to think of the year, but the main thing is that at that time, work slowed down to a halt. You know, I don't think we worked much for a couple months. So I was doing side jobs to go along with trying to stay organized on the maintenance crew. You have to be on top of your game of not forgetting things, what tools to bring to stay very efficient. So the value of what I learned on that maintenance crew, it reflected on being self-employed, doing side jobs, to stay organized, showing up to someone's house and do work. You know, you want to be organized and not forget stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I led into launching my business. Was I studied business for 2 years while working. Work slowed down, and it slowed down enough that I just stayed really steady doing side jobs for homeowners at their house. Use my organizing skills I learned to just work for homeowners. Showing up unprepared or forgetting a tool, it doesn't work self-employed, because you can't just go drive over there real quick and grab a tool. You got to drive all the way across town. I just noticed it was going to work for me really well.
Sure. And I'm assuming you had to buy your own tools. You weren't able to use any of the company's tools.
No, not at all. Had to get my own tools. So started with what I had, very little. Obviously bought an impact driver and the basics, and didn't accept jobs that I didn't have the tools for. So I did have to turn down jobs that I didn't have tools for, and just wait till the day I got those tools. And then I was able to progress as much work as I could do.
Sure, sure. So at this point, you're not specializing in the doors yet. You're doing just a general range of jobs. What are some of the types of jobs that you would do? Some small to large projects. Kind of list some of those.
Yeah, so handyman type stuff. And that's basically where I came at this idea to go self-employed, was side jobs. I just love the experience. So everything from trim repair, people had new flooring installed, but then nobody wanted to install the base trim for some reason. So I would get hired for that, or maybe a little bit of siding repair, or build a small porch, deck handrail, build like small awnings, stuff like that.
Okay. And as you're doing all of this work, have you yet experienced the specific genre of the doors, of the trim? Well, I know you said you'd done the trim work at that church a lot earlier.
Yep.
And so now you're doing handyman work. Had you also worked, and you'd worked with the doors too, right?
Yep.
Okay. And so you're doing the handyman work, but in your mind, you're thinking about the trim and the doors. How did you decide to transition to focusing on the trim work and the doors?
Yep. I kind of noticed that I decided, yes, I want to start a handyman business. So that was my decision. I told my boss, hey, I'm going to go ahead and start a handyman business.
This was a long conversation, and I broke this up into two parts. Check out part two for the rest of the conversation. How much horsepower did the original 1903 Model A have? The next episode of the Blue Collar Voices show is again with Jay. Part two. Here is a little clip.
So putting trim boards on walls with brick, you're doing a lot of scribe cuts, or the concrete floor is wavy. So your baseboards don't just go down. You have to scribe cut every single baseboard in there. Mm. I replaced all of our interior doors for solid core doors. That was a pretty neat experience to feel the difference of hollow core doors, get those out of there, and then throw in solid core doors and the way they shut.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Blue Collar Voices Show. On this episode's page on bluecollarvoices.com, you will find show notes and any relevant links. If you are not subscribed to get notifications of new show episodes, you can do that at bluecollarvoices.com as well. Hey, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time.
I'll be back.